And welcome to A Papa's Basement. I'm your host, John Papa Giorgio. I'm joined today by Sean Westfall of the Unified Scene Theater.
That's me, yes.
Brian Duss of Brian Duss's House.
Thank you so much. On behalf of Dr. Claw, Sassy Pirate Industries, and myself, I would like to welcome you to my living room.
And join us today, English Good, is entertainer Busy Fane, whose name I've never mispronounced.
Never, not once. Thank you.
Thank you for coming and joining us all. I know you're friends with everyone but me, pretty much. So,
though I have listened to your podcast many times, I'm a huge fan.
Oh, really?
Over the DMV, they listen to Papa's Basement.
I'm going to use an industry term right now, gentlemen. That's how BHs are smooched properly. That's how that goes down. Thank you, Busy.
Yeah.
She knows. Yeah, this is a PG show.
PG.
That's why
PG.
In The Lion King, they talked all about BH kisses. And everyone's like, what does that stand for? And the kids, you know, the adults got it. It's that double entendre humor that they love in Disney. And pretty much, yeah, it's just O&A shock jock speak. Where it's like, I'm going to F you in the A, Simba. And it's like, what? What's going on here?
I feel like there's a whole world of AM radio that I know nothing about.
Why do you think that is?
Well, one...
Like, did you not grow up with AM radio?
I didn't have a lot of car riding and AM listening.
Right.
I did grow up listening to a very... I was a very, very young child, and I used to
listen
to...
We all were.
At one time.
Imus and the Munin. I lived in New York, and you either listened to Howard Stern or Don Imus.
Right.
And somehow...
Don Imus.
It was a Don Imus household.
Right.
And by
you
household,
were an
I
Imus
mean...
household?
I think my dad put it on once... And then, like, changed the channel. I was like, oh, this is what grown-ups listen to. I guess I listened to Don Imus before going to middle school.
That was my experience, except Stern.
I think we actually talked about the difference between AM radio and FM radio.
Yeah, amplitude modulation versus frequency
modulation. But more importantly, like, the culture surrounding AM radio and FM radio back in, like, the 70s.
Yes.
Like and I think we talked about this. There's a sketch that Saturday Night Live did, like, in the first or second season where Dan Aykroyd plays a DJ who's doing double duty as an AM radio DJ and an FM radio DJ. So he's like, hey, welcome to AM 560. We get the weather on the hours and blah, 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 blah. You know, then he like switch the thing of, hey, welcome to 105.3 FM. We get some Black Sabbath coming up at the top of the hour. And he's like completely different, like, you know, audiences and stuff like that. So
that's great.
I miss radio culture. Podcast culture is nothing. You're listening to a podcast. This is barren. There's nothing to build around here. There's no nutrition here.
Busy AM radio. AM radio. What do you think?
Well, apart from traffic
and
maybe
weather.
Golf and weather.
On the 8th.
Golf is huge on AM.
Right. If you love muted clapping, you'll love AM radio.
Shh, yeah. Listen to the grass.
That's right.
But what comes on AM radio these days?
Christian music, I think.
Oh.
It's exclusively Christian
Great.
Music.
Yeah,
Christian music.
I want to say the only AM radio station I ever worked at was my first WDMV AM 700 that was licensed as a DC area station but broadcast out of Frederick, Maryland. That was the tower. Okay. And we did business talk. So I don't even remember who we had, but we were so broke. We didn't have like an ISDN line feeding the signal to us. We would take...
Nerd alert.
We would call into the station to get the signal fed to us over the phone, and then I would put the phone on hold, and that was the air signal.
What is ISDM?
ISDM.
Internet Stellar Direct Marketing? What is it?
It's Direct Nancy.
Okay,
actually.
So
DN.
It's the patch in for, like, high quality.
Nerd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nerd and
it's
queen.
It's all about fidelity.
Have you all seen that cell phone tower? It's out in Maryland somewhere in Silver Spring.
It's supposed to be disguised as a tree. Yeah, it's huge. It's gargantuan.
It's massive.
It's
three times the size of any tree out there, but they've put fake branches and leaves on it.
Well, now you've destroyed the mystery for me. I thought we had a redwood.
It's a tree
terrible.
That grows at right angles. It's weird. It's
crazy. It's always green.
It's weird.
Built to withstand hurricanes. I thought it was natural selection, but... All right. So last week, if you guys listened to that episode,
apparently Busy did.
Let's just say
I listened
yes.
to every episode.
Yeah, Josh, yes, and. Mm-hmm. Josh and Colleen brought prep to the show, like an actual overarching theme, like a bit we could do, and we ranked celebrities 1 to 10
Nerd.
On their relative fit. Exactly. Jessica Alba, you cerebral queen.
So what are we talking about today, then?
So I wanted to bring another bit, which Brian Ned Flanders Duss over here promptly shot down.
Heidi hoity.
I wanted to talk the most overrated, in your opinion, comedian, comedy, film, and like just, I guess it morphed into TV show. I was thinking comedy TV show. Brian, who will actually go places in life, and Sean quickly seconded him.
Because Brian will go places in life.
He's a hustler.
He likes to gag. Hey, listen. I learned a lot about life from playing Little League. Everywhere you had to go, you'd hustle. You'd hustle out to the field, you'd hustle it back to the field. I think partly because baseball is super boring. Right. So if you had to watch children walk in from right field, it just makes it more painful for the parents.
Cool.
I loved being in right field. It was where they stopped and they shoved the portly boys and we got to just chill out.
Well, hey, not everyone can be a catcher. You have to put another...
That would be too hard on my chubby little knees.
Hey-o.
So the bit...
So the bit, I wanted to do the, you know, what you considered the most overrated, and especially because I like to keep up with the times, so I've been watching Taxi recently on Hulu.
Current.
Exactly. Keeping it current, 78's finest, and it got me thinking about certain feelings for both the show and Andy Kaufman in particular. Brian 180'd on me. He's like, look, let's talk about who's underrated. Let's just talk people up. Let's build them up. Again,
sweet Brian.
Yeah, Sean.
I agree. I think you should rather, it's easier and better to praise than blame.
Sean spotted a winner in Brian. He's like, I've backed the wrong pony so far, but I can I can jump mid-race. So he's now smashing his riding crop into your ass.
Well, maybe we should leave it up to Busy. Busy, what do you think? Praise or blame? You want to do underrated?
I prefer praise, but I'm very interested in Papa's
criticism. How about if we...
I'm not, but it's his show, so we're going to listen politely.
I think you...
How about if we indulge Papa and let him get his... Is anti-Taxi or anti-Andy Kaufman rant?
It might be pro one and con the other.
Got it. Ah. And then we'll go to the praising.
Oh, that sounds great.
I want to do it, like, let's just round robin it, where you three praise, and then we go to me for spite.
Comedy always finish on a high.
So we're talking about we're talking about a comedian, a comedic TV show, and then a comedic film.
Right, yeah, we can do that order. Yeah. And I'm going to be like tiny Zeus Lister on the boat in Dark Knight when he's begging.
Nerd. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Should people have a Google window open the whole show so they can figure out what you're talking about?
Y'all need a nerd alert,
we need to annotate this podcast like it's a David Foster Wallace novel.
It's nicer than what people used to call me. Nerd. I can roll with nerd. You know, that Sheldon, or is the other one, Leonard?
Young Sheldon?
No, Sheldon. Which one is Sheldon having sex with? Blossom? I don't really watch the show.
Same here.
I don't think they show that part. I think they allude to it, but...
I don't know if Sheldon has a mate. I think it's the other ones.
Well, Leonard has Penny.
Yeah.
Sheldon, I think, is Blossom.
Oh, then, yeah, that sounds right. Blossom.
And then there's the shorter
there's the
blonde
one
the
and
more
the other one.
Voluptuous woman. And is there a fourth person? Fourth female? All right. So that is our current Big Bang thing. I could have easily lobbed that into the hate pile, but
let's go ahead and hear your rants. Let's hear these.
Oh, I was wondering where the sound effects were.
Oh my God, that was flawlessly integrated. Yeah. Wow. My Lord.
You're the AM radio enthusiast.
I want to hear it. I want to hear your rant.
All right. Producer Duss, now apple of Sean's eye. Are we starting with comedian, show, or movie?
There's nothing that the listeners want to hear more than four people trying to decide who will go first on the podcast.
It's great. I mean, we have a shortest straw system that's completely visual.
I want to hear Sean, comedian, most underrated.
So I didn't limit it to stand-up comedians. Okay. I limited it to
same, I didn't.
Nor should you.
To improv and sketch comedians. And some of you may have heard me rant about this before in public or in real estate seminars. Anyway, I don't know why that came from.
Still have that free knife.
I always go back to the first season of SNL, right?
Yes.
And of all the actors on there, people, you know, everyone remembers Belushi and everyone remembers Chevy.
Who?
He's dead. Don't worry about it. And everyone remembers Gilda Radner.
Yes.
The person who never gets any love and never makes anyone's list is Lorraine Newman.
Okay.
She gets no fucking love. And I, for one, cannot comprehend why, because she is simply amazing. She's stunning. She was only 22 years old when she was cast on that show.
Wow.
22. When I was 22, I was doing heroin and net porn. Okay, that's what I was doing, right? She had trained at the Groundlings.
Internet porn or sex with nets?
Whatever.
Okay.
She's like the Pete Davidson of the 70s. Except
that she had a bit more on the ball than Pete Davidson. If you look at her work in the first season of SNL, she creates a brand new character for almost every single sketch.
Yep.
And not only that, but some of her characters are like archetypes. I think this is like back in 1975, 76. I think she did the very first like California girl who talked like this. Like she created an archetype. Mm-hmm. And she's stunning. She's amazing. She never gets enough love. She is, if I were putting together a list of like top 10 SNL, she'd be on that list. She's amazing. I love Lorraine Newman. I will always have a crush on Lorraine Newman.
Two questions.
Sir.
One, do you think her legacy was harmed by also creating the blackface archetype? Two, like, what has she gone on? Because I'm not familiar as much as I should be with the first season. Like, what else did she do?
She really didn't do all that much. And and it's tragic because she... Let me put it this way. She stayed in L.A. and because that's where she's from. She's, you know, quintessential L.A. girl. I think she went back to Groundlings and taught there and did a bunch of work. I think she did a lot of voiceover work, but she didn't really have... I'm sure she's fine. She was like when they had the 45th anniversary show or 40th. She was on there. They featured her. She was in the Californian sketch, right? Right. But I just... I think that a couple things happened, and I don't want to presume here, but I think she had a pretty bad coke habit, like anyone on that show in the 70s, and it put a pretty bad coke habit and had to go take care of that. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of that, realized that the sort of careers that actually ruined Belushi, that killed Belushi and have since come to take their toll on someone like Chevy Chase, who's barely a recognizable human being these days. I think she realized that, and again, I'm presuming, I've never met the woman. She doesn't do many interviews, even though they should. But she just decided to just hang back and be in LA. I think she has a family now. But she's still friends with one of her good friends is Pam Dauber, who was on Mork and Mindy. She knows mm-hmm. her really well. There's a couple of people that she's really good friends with. But yeah, she just keeps a low profile. None of that stuff interests her. And I kind of sort of admire her for that. Like,
I like that too.
Yeah. So.
I just want to, before we cut to Bizet, and we will scream, let's get Bizet every
time.
Finally.
Where's my hip-hop air horn now?
Mic to your face, Dust. Darn it, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm jealous of people that got to do a ton of blow in the 70s, because now it's so stomped on and so filled with fentanyl.
Right.
Like, you can take that stuff and just have an opiate OD. And, like, I was not expecting
that. Wait, so your number one source of disappointment is you wish you could have done more cocaine.
I pretty much wish I were Stevie Nicks.
Yeah. And just have no nasal cavity whatsoever.
Yeah. I just want, like, 10 costumed rings and just crack them open, and everyone's like, oh, it's the witch doing her thing, and I'm just tooting.
Talk about overrated.
I want to hear Bizzies.
Oh, gosh, you guys. So there's so many, and I don't even know where to begin. But I'm going to say you're going to notice probably a theme amongst my comedic underrated things that we're discussing
today. All Albanians?
Today. Correct. No. but I'm going to go with Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah. Well, okay. Nice choice.
I don't know if
nice
she's.
Choice.
I don't know her rating. This is the other thing. I don't know how my overrated, underrated metric.
So
scale
let's just explain the
up.
Mom in Beetlejuice, the Mom in Home Alone, SCTV, yes. Now in Schitt's Creek.
Yep. Right. Yes. Yep. So yep. She's in a lot of more mainstream things, I guess, these days. Schitt's Creek. I don't know if everyone has a Netflix subscription. Yep. Obviously,
by
the Mom
today's
and
standards,
Home Alone.
That's mainstream.
Yeah. Mom and Home Alone. And I really like her. Christopher Guest.
Yeah. Her work with Christopher Guest.
The best. I think her timing is great. She doesn't overact. She says a lot with her face and her mannerisms, and it's hard to do and make it realistic. And mm-hmm. she says a lot with so little.
Yeah, I just started watching SCTV the other day on YouTube, and she was always funny. I was genuinely impressed by everything she did. A great article in the New Yorker.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
When was that? A couple of years ago?
No. It was like within the last week or two.
Okay, was it?
About SCTV or Catherine O'Hara?
On Catherine O'Hara. Yeah.
Just her talking and like having insights into her character, which I wouldn't have had. I love hearing like a great mind who ran with like she's integral to the show, but she's not like a huge character. Like it's pretty ensemble. And she's going on and on about like what the character's clothing choices signified crap like that. I'm like, good Lord, that is
very detail-oriented.
Well, I think this also brings us to another aspect. And it's funny because I included a couple of these names on my list as well. You know, comedic actors get short shrift.
Sure.
Despite the fact that it's much easier, I think, to be a dramatic actor than it is to be a comedic actor. Because dramatic actors, it's easy to sort of chew the scenery on the tragedy that we all, you know.
How dare you, Sean!
Exactly. And finally, here we are. But whereas comedic actors, they have to commit to a premise that in many ways is completely unrealistic or fantastical, right? You know, a guy wakes up every day and every day is the same. A man who's relatively attractive at age 40 has never known the pleasures of the flesh, right? And these are characters who are fantastical, and comic premises are fantastical. And to play that is actually much more difficult than it is to play, I think, you know, I lost my wife or my kid died or whatever, right?
There's something about scripted comedy, too, that makes it so much harder, I think. Anybody can write
a
dramatic scene and then stuff, but to make a line land, to get the timing down,
how
to have a
dare
script.
Dare you, busy!
Just like that.
Yeah.
Well, Exhibit A.
Like I think two actors who are comedic actors who are underrated, I put them on this list for... Eddie Murphy is a fantastic fucking actor.
Oh yeah,
and why he doesn't? He can do multiple, and like he gets shit on for doing, you know, the clumps or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
He gets shit on for that.
Or Dr. Doolittle.
Try doing 9 or 10 characters in a fucking movie.
I mean,
fucking hard.
The range of Donkey is just incredible.
No, come on, don't shit on him.
Isn't that why you're isn't that where you got the name for your lock company?
Hercules Safe and Lock.
Hercules.
My dad's Greek, so by law he had to name it like that or Ares or something like that. But yeah,
Thor.
Another guy, like Jim Carrey's performance in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Boy,
he was fucking robbed.
He was robbed. He was great.
And again, To do some of the characters he does who are so blatantly over the top, but to make them quasi believable and not sort of like cheesy in some way, it takes a lot of fucking hard work and talent. Yeah. And it's something that like a lot of dramatic actors couldn't fucking do.
Well, it's also the level of commitment that comedians, I think, have to have, which allows them to be also very good dramatic actors. Have you seen the documentary about his work in Man on the Moon?
Yeah. No, but I've heard of that. It's supposed to be good.
We'll be getting to that.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to get to that later. Yeah. I don't know. I think...
keep going. We'll get to it on... I have other takes on it. I want to hear the good take first.
I think the conversation we were having before the show about overrated and underrated...
Right.
It makes me think of The Newsroom, the episode where, you know, they're talking about the top 10 most overrated films versus like unappreciated. There's a certain amount where we've talked about like some of the stand up that we're trying to do at Unified Scene Theater, and you know, classes are forming now.
Right.
Is part
What's
of this
check like, it out, unifiedscenetheater.com.
Yeah. No, just that a lot of the stand up, there's some stand ups I know that are awesome. Like at the local level, at the DC level.
Right.
And then there are a lot of stand ups I've hung around with who are super negative and very depressed. So there's a certain amount of like, I like that we're kind of trying to cherry pick improv folks who are trying to do stand up, because the whole thing of like, no, like before you do open mic stand up, no one's like, got your back, zip, zap, zop. We're all in this together. It's going to be awesome. I love you. Yes. And you know what I mean? So like to have improv folks do stand up is just felt the first run we did. That was one of the more packed shows I've ever been at. And it was also, everyone was super positive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like even, you know, not everyone crushed it, but everyone made them feel good.
Right.
And like, you know, I'm not trying to like be miserable for 15 years and then be a stand-up comedian.
Right, right. This is a good segue. So who's your favorite underrated comedian?
Maria Bamford.
I love her.
Yeah.
And there are some people who say like, okay, yeah, they're rated about Right. I would say she's underrated.
She's pretty beloved, yeah.
Well, she's beloved. Like think of the, you know, like, you know, the folks that we're surrounded by right now. Like, we're not your average American. But if you look like, who is Judd Apatow's favorite comedian? Who is Stephen Colbert's favorite comedian? It's Maria Bamford.
Yeah.
Like, people who know, people with good taste.
Right.
Maria Bamford's their favorite stand-up comedian.
And what I love about her is her ability to, again, characters.
Yes.
To inhabit personas. And
oh, my gosh,
Like multifarious characters within minutes. She's just amazing at that. Right?
And I think that one other thing I really like about her is she's honest about some of the mental health issues and struggles she's gone through. But also, I think, especially from what I've heard from younger female comics, is that she'll talk about money. Not in a, oh, I made this money, much money doing Target commercials.
Sales at Macy's and such.
But if you are working this room in Sheboygan, you should be getting 400 to middle or whatever it is.
Right.
Because a lot of times people do it without even knowing. Like, they'll underpay women because they're like, just that's what we've always done. Not to be mean. They're just like, men sometimes are louder and pushier. And they're like, all right, I'll pay you whatever.
Right.
And then women are nicer.
And there's still that stigma with the bill there, not the invoice bill, but like the play bill, the show bill.
Right, right.
You know, you see a woman's name on the deal or whatever, and you're going to be like, oh, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see a chick.
Yeah.
You know, come on, bro. Still sort of want to see, like,
bro comedians.
Stop
bro.
Doing my lines, busy. I'll say this. I'm not very familiar with her outside of the Netflix show, but I greatly enjoy that show.
Her first comedy album is stunning. It really is. I know portions of it by heart.
Let's Get Small?
Yes, exactly.
I watch YouTube clips of her all the time. Just like, it's so weird and unique, and just her pacing is perfect. Mm-hmm. Her characters, her commitment is perfect. And, you know, I think, you know, people are going to be looking. It's also one of those things where, like, people are going to look back on it. It's kind of like Wet Hot American Summer. Yeah.
Right.
Where, like, people were, you know, at the time, they're like, man, I wish this would have done better. I've heard people who were in it say, like, I don't want it to be a cult classic. Right. I wanted to make money and then help it launch my career.
Right.
But people will look back for years and years at Maria Bamford, at the chances and the characters she's taken, and they're going to be amazed.
Right.
Segue.
All right. Who's yours?
I'm doing overrated. Remember?
Oh, all right.
I don't praise.
All right. So do we hold off on you at the end?
No, we circle back to me. So you guys do three nice things, and then I do the evil thing.
Okay.
And you all heap upon me, because I'm going to attack some pretty popular stuff.
He's
going
to attack popular people, and then at the end of the show, we will get into a segment I like to call
Brian Kisses the Agent's Asses.
Yeah. BH.
No, that's part of it, too.
BH is the BH.
I am under the false... I mean, I only have recently been honest about it, but what I would love to do more than anything is be on SNL. And there's also a certain amount of, like, being on crews, having crewed on, you know, projects and being in bands and whatnot is, like, trying to be a good hang. Like, that's what people say, too.
Yes.
Is that, like, I totally respect your opinions. They're always funny.
Thank you.
And I haven't heard all these, but I probably...
Someone's been taking BH lessons.
I probably agree with you on a lot of them, but, like, but the thing is, I would like to work with some of these people, and I think that I could.
Well, that's why, for my first selection, I'm attacking the dead.
A dead man.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, now who's a baby?
And that would be one Andrew Kaufman.
Yes.
Thank you. Sean, I want to get your take on Andy as well, because I'm sure he's one of those dudes you're probably going to love, and I like disappointing you in some ways. Oh, you look like kind of middle of the road on Andy. I'm liking it so far.
Well, let me hear your thoughts.
All right, here are my thoughts. I have my shameful blue-collar background, but it is what it is. I don't get off.
We can dig into that later. Why is a blue-collar background shameful? You've now alienated half of our audience.
No, as someone who equally has a blue-collar background, grew up a half-step out of the trailer park.
Yeah.
I get it.
All right, fair enough.
It may not be perceived by others as shameful, but there's a shame that's in...
It's a true prejudice that has not been eradicated to this day. Like,
right.
Honest to God. Like... Right. The left loves to counter any sort of, like, racial stuff and sexual stuff, and that's all well and good. The class shit with the left is alive and well, man. I swear to God. But for me, Andy Kaufman, anytime I see that dude, and especially going into your Man on the Moon, what was it called? The Jim Carrey?
Man on the Moon.
Yeah, well, like him channeling the Netflix special.
Oh, yeah. I forget what the name
is. Him channeling Andy, but doing the same bullshit Andy would do, like delaying productions for hours Or, like, I'm just some Long Island schmo. I am taking my wife to see some entertainment in the city. Oh, this dick bag is playing a Mighty Mouse record for 3 hours in a row. Right. And screaming, here I come to save the day over it. That sucks, dude. Just be effing funny. Like, don't couch yourself behind weirdness.
Is that method acting?
And then, I don't know what it is. I guess he himself didn't really claim to be a comedian. And other people kind of put that on him. I think he said, I'm more of a entertainer. And if he went under that umbrella, if you will, I'd be fine with it.
So you have an issue with how he labeled himself?
How he was maybe even labeled by others.
Yeah, I'll have to say, like, if any one of our parents or friends went to any of his performances, they would never shut up about how they got to see Andy Kaufman.
Yeah,
I also talk about friends that barely missed, you know, like, dying in 9/11. Doesn't mean I want to be part of that either, man. Like, there's all kinds of brushes with shit and infamy. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I had friends that were on the Virginia Tech campus when it got shot up. I talk about that, too. Like, we just like to be near big things, be they horrible or, you know.
No, that's a valid point. Like, a near-death experience. Like, sometimes something can be memorable and in the moment not good. I would like to see your point.
Yeah.
And I understand that. I just think he was trying to do something that was... You know, there's sort of a legacy of his comedy.
I'm sure
and
at
stuff.
The time and, it was incredibly radical, and yeah, I cannot appreciate
it. I can understand him reading a whole book. Like, what did he read of Mice and Men or whatever it was to make the
Great Gatsby,
He read this whole book from start to finish, and just people walked out.
Yeah.
But, like, as an art piece,
it's
entertainment. Whether it's music or comedy or, like, performance art, like, it's all entertainment.
I feel it's a negation of actual creation.
Could be.
Like, just, like, being like, I'm an anti-architect, so I burned down this house. You know what? I respect the dude that built the fucking house. That's me.
Yeah. So, here's my cavil with that. I think we kind of forget what the late 70s were like. There's a little bit of historicism there.
There's a lot of cocaine rings.
Well, no, if only there were cocaine rings in areas where they might have done some good.
Okay.
So let's keep in mind... Johnny Carson was hosting the Tonight Show, right? He was wearing a suit and tie on his show.
Yeah.
Bob Hope would come on unannounced, and they would play Thanks for the Memories, and Bob Hope would go on and do the same sort of schmucky, stupid crap. You know, as Eddie Murphy once said,
Johnny,
I got to tell you, right? Isn't he something? as Eddie Murphy once said, Bob Hope once hired... He had like 1,000 joke writers at his disposal. He never once made me laugh, right? And then there were, you know, Vegas comedians were big, you know. There was something rotten at the center of comedy, at least in the mainstream thing, right? And Andy was kind of like a big fuck you to that, right? Was he always successful? No. I mean, was he off-putting in some ways? He probably was off-putting to a number of people. But I think there were a lot of people who go... Oh, yeah, he's playing around with that trope of, I'm a comedian, I'm going to tell set-up punchline act-out jokes that are completely and utterly fucking insincere that you didn't even write. There was something, let's call it authentic about him. By the way, Andy Kaufman's one-hour special, which NBC still disavows to this day, is fucking brilliant.
Okay. Why did they disavow it?
Which book did he read?
I'm sorry?
Which book did he read?
Watch it.
Okay.
You can find it on YouTube.
The telephone book.
He had the usual Andy Kaufman dynamic. Mm-hmm. He had trouble doing some of the things he wanted to do. There are portions of it that are Andy Kaufman-esque. They don't seem to make sense. But Andy was before his time. I'll tell you, the guy who is kind of an asshole is Bob Zemuda, who was his writing partner. Mm. He's kind of a dick, and all of comedy kind of hates this guy, right?
Right.
But Andy himself, despite he had troubles and challenges, I think he was you know playing
he was left-handed.
There was that, right?
Right.
But he was playing around with a genre that really needed a shot in the arm, that really needed reinvigorating.
And I appreciate that. I know he had his struggles and things, and I like the FU, and I'm going to do something different. But I think I would be remiss to say that had he not been a white male, people would have taken Mort Papa's point and been like, "Make us laugh, monkey." instead of giving him this platform. See, I would to have be respected like, that huh, more. Maybe would, this is
hope,
art.
I would hope that if he was an African American comedian, no one would say "make us laugh."
Well, like, God, yeah, no.
I would hope that that wouldn't happen.
I don't know. Like, I mean, Savannah,
who knows? If it was a different
New York in the '70s.
By the way, by the bit of trivia though, Elvis's, you know, hundreds of Elvis impersonators. Elvis said his favorite Elvis impersonator was Andy Kaufman.
He really? Andy okay. Kaufman. Wow. Yeah. Fuck. All right. You got some Elvis.
Speaking of cocaine
there.
In the 70s.
Yeah. Wait,
have you guys ever met Blelvis? The black Elvis?
No.
He walks around Columbia Heights. You go up to him, and he will tell you Elvis trivia. And he'll be like, give me a word, any word. And he will tie it back to an Elvis story.
I Where is Blelvis, awesome. And why isn't he on?
Why doesn't he have a show at the Unified Scene right? Theater? I do not understand.
I heard you say 70s Elvis cocaine and Blelvis. And
Blelvis, the black Elvis. Like, he has Elvis. Sideburns. He's starting to get a little gray.
Is an right? Elvis made
so
of blow.
You'll see him wandering around 11th Street, and he's very nice. And if you're having a conversation, he'll wait till the conversation ends, and then he'll approach you. He's not rude. And then, like, the goal is for, you know, charitable donations at the end.
You know, Elvis's daughter's name is Lisa Marie. Do you know that? Oh, White Rush.
Is there
White
a
Rush,
chance
God bless. Thank you.
That Chuck Brown faked his death and is now going as Blelvis? Okay.
No.
All right.
No. That's the case.
I thought that was going to be next episode.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Next time, Papa's Basement.
Sorry. I've been reading too much Dune lately with Paul Atreides faking his death.
Oh, Andy Kaufman's 100% alive.
Andy Kaufman?
Yeah.
You said Andy Kaplan.
Kaufman.
Oh, okay. Kaufman or Kaufman?
Proper pronunciation.
Yeah.
I understand it as Kaufman, but I have been wrong at least 7 times on this episode so
far. I think
far.
It's Kaufman.
Yeah. You think it's Kaufman?
Yeah.
People can fight a Twitter war over okay. this. Ooh. Also, all these links, I would imagine, will be in the show notes.
Yes.
Damn it, Brian!
Why are you doing a lot of screaming today?
Because he likes to have to do a lot of post-production on his own show.
Mm-hmm. I move the mic away when I scream. Yeah. There's no post.
All right, moving on to movie.
Favorite
comedy movie
underrated.
Underrated. You
said. Underrated.
So I'm going to start with this one. I don't know why nobody mentions Johnny Dangerously as a great. It's a fucking brilliant comedy. I love that movie.
Who's in it? I barely remember the name.
This is my point.
Okay. My mother hung me on a nail once.
Michael Keaton once. Plays a gangster. It's a sort of a parody of gangster movies, okay. right?
I thought it was pretty good.
And I swear to God, I still laugh at that character, Roman Maroney. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
You fucking assholes.
Yes.
I'm going to put your bells in a sling, you fucking corks. I repeat that to myself. At least once a month,
hey,
and make myself.
I grew up in an evangelical Christian home. I love to mince my oaths.
Right, right.
Wait, when did it come out?
Like 80. I tell you, it had to come out in the early to mid 80s, like 83 or 84, because Joe Piscopo was given a supporting role as a comic character, and that's when Joe Piscopo's star was.
My entire life is divided into pre and post Mr. Mom. So
okay, well,
is it pre or post?
This is post Mr. Mom.
Okay,
Johnny Danger, Michael Keaton. He does a great job in that.
I love Keaton.
I don't know what happened that people crapped on him for a long time, and then Birdman came back.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just you know.
Still, the saddest thing you will ever see is him thinking he's going to win the Oscar for Best Actor. And, like, he's standing up and pulling out a speech.
No.
And I forget who they announce instead. And he just does the little turn back around and sits right back down.
Oh.
And just plays it off and starts applauding.
Well, what's the movie where they try to bring the Japanese factory to America?
Oh, that's another great movie.
Batman Returns.
Yeah. It's him and Geta Watanabe who played Long Duck Dong in 16 Candles.
Yep.
It's not Used Cars. That's Kurt Russell. It's George Wendt is in it.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
It's a great fucking movie. It's actually pretty damn good.
Yeah.
There's a factory. It's like it's in Detroit or it's in somewhere in the Rust Belt.
He's also a car dude in I think Detroit in Mr. Mom. Right, like that's kind of he's fired from that game.
That may be the case, but this is where he's head of like the union or something like that. He's a union rep.
Yeah, and he goes to Japan
and convinces them to build the factory there. And it's he sort of had this culture clash between working class people who mm-hmm. are not, and the way that Japanese factories are run, sort of like team oriented.
Classic fish out of water.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Turned on its head.
Classic.
All right.
What's it called?
We
like,
will
made in America or something.
Something
like that.
Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
All right, you ready, Busy?
Yeah,
I
busy.
Am. Well, I was until you just said made in America.
Oh.
And now I'm thinking coming to America.
Is that underrated?
No.
Is it not? Is it a properly rated?
Beloved, oh,
okay,
yes.
Okay, okay. Well,
that was a test, and you guys all passed.
Passed. Yeah. Good job. I was just checking to see if y'all were awake. I don't know. Again, I'm going with Christopher Guest, Best in Show.
Yeah.
It's a slower kind of
Do you feel
comedy.
Like people don't appreciate it enough?
I do.
Who? So when you just like general, I guess I have a lot of weird nerd comedy friends. So I guess it's. My perception of it is that it is beloved, but it might just be
it's a
the
Bamford
comedy nerd
pick.
Friends.
It's the same as
around.
Him picking Bamford. Like, the people in the comedy know, I think, would say that's legit his best film, maybe short of Spinal Tap or whatever.
Oh, Spinal Tap was
the
greatest.
Like,
I feel like
yeah,
that was
best in show.
Rated.
Had you said Mascots or something, I would have been like, yeah.
So when it came out, how did it do when it came out?
That's what I'm sort of talking about, yeah, is that I just think people didn't get it. Sort of like they didn't get Andy Kaufman,
right.
you know, when
Thank
he
you.
Came out. Yes.
Andrew Kaufman.
Yeah, because it's slow, but it's brilliant at the same time. The characters are great. They're so real.
Right.
And it sort of pokes fun at the everyday. People take dog shows very seriously.
Parker Posey at her best.
Oh, my goodness.
Fred Willard.
And the Busy Bee.
Yeah. Busy Bee.
She needs her Busy Bee.
Well, you know, I think about the time when the movies came out, too. It's kind of hard to look back because I think about this all the time, and I mention this in my day job, is talking to people about, like, MLK. White evangelical Christians, the overwhelming majority of them, hated the idea of MLK's and March on Washington.
Uh-huh.
Now people look mm-hmm. back and they look him at as a saint, but you can't forget how much at the time people did not like him.
Terrifying right. radical at the time.
Well, yeah. I think you know we can make a case for you know Best in Show being before its time. No,
yes.
No, improv really wasn't at the forefront of the culture.
Right.
And almost every single... I mean, all Christopher Guest does is turn on the camera and ask characters to behave,
go.
To mm-hmm. improvise, right? Andy Kaufman, again, I tried to historicize that. He came along at a time when sweaty tuxedos in Vegas was kind of what people thought of as comedy. And I think that's a healthy thing to have. So, Yeah.
All right. I am taking a chance here. The early 90s were a rough time.
For all of us.
What?
And one of the things that helped me pull through was a little movie called Hudson Hawk.
Ew. Hudson Hawk?
Bruce Willis.
Is that even a comedy? What?
Danny Aiello. Are you guys even aware of this movie?
I am not.
Of course. It almost killed Bruce Willis's career.
I know. Like, literally
put
a dent in Hollywood
right,
for a couple
right,
years.
Right,
yeah.
right, right.
If you go back...
One of the bombs.
Yeah, including the guy from NYPD Blue who was on for like a season and then... Oh, David Caruso or
David
whatever.
Caruso, okay.
He didn't speak a single line. He only spoke in little business cards that he would hand out.
Oh.
So they didn't have to pay him or anything.
That's right. He didn't have a SAG card. Well, I think that like... I mean, Danny Aiello? I mean, can we just say that?
Love him in Jacob's Ladder. Love him mm-hmm. in Moonstruck.
Love him in Madonna's Papa Don't Preach video.
He did not
various reach. Spike Lee movies.
That's right.
No, I think if you go
Saul's
back,
famous pizzeria.
If you go back, was it Sandra Bernhard? I always confuse Sandra Bernhard and Sandra Bernhard. Which one was the actress and one is the
you know, for a guy who wants to get ahead in entertainment, you seem to have a problem with Jewish last names. It's Kaufman. It's Bernhard.
Wow,
get it right, dude. Get
wow.
it right. What? What? I'm just sorry.
You
okay,
might
so
that
so,
blue collar bluntness.
Why do you think it's funny?
I think that the story it tells is so unique, and I think it just didn't land at the right moment. It was quirky, and I just think if you go back and watch it now, it has a mixture of elements that, you know, kind of feels like a... I guess maybe at the time it felt like it was a potluck where it's like someone brought a cold noodle salad, and, you know, you brought brownies, and they don't go well together. But if you go back and watch it, I think you will really appreciate. They have, like, a song number while they're doing a heist, which I guess at the time probably seemed a little stupid.
Right.
But, I mean, I thought it was... I think it holds up.
Yep. Cool.
And it's not just because...
Was it even really a comedy?
It's
how dare you?
It's sort of a comedy action flick.
Okay.
In the same way that I have a movie I'm keeping in my back pocket for now, but...
Last Action Hero.
It's not the last... Last Action Hero is not bad.
It's not. I like Shane Black.
Shane Black. Yeah. Is it rocking the screenplay there. But yeah, it's a in the same. All right, I'll one of my favorite movies, and I don't know anyone. It never makes anyone's top 10 list. Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
This might be the only time I ever go negative on this podcast. Yeah.
So tell me why you don't. It's a fantastic. All right,
Sean's
movie.
Mic is off now, so can keep talking.
I think there, in some ways, it maybe was overhyped.
Oh, really?
So it could be a matter of my own personal perception. It just felt like it was overhyped to have these stars finally together in a movie, and like there was a twist. There was one twist in the movie.
They're assassins.
You know, you could use the term a nonstop roller coaster from start to finish if you were so inclined to use that. So in that sense, it was entertaining, and I could see how it had broad appeal. I just feel like there were a lot of other movies that could be swapped in. Like if I went and sat in the movie theater to watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith and they swapped in another movie, I wouldn't walk out and be like, oh, this is also... has a little humor. It's also action.
Do we want to talk about this? Do we want to go into this digression? Because I can talk about it later, but I want to hear his. I don't want to compromise the mic.
I was just
compromise
say,
the mic.
As a Christian, Brian was turned off by the home wrecking aspect of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Whatever happened to intact families?
Sanctity of marriage.
Seriously. That's seductress with her.
Also,
large
lots
lips
of murder.
Let's talk about that. After maybe on another episode.
No, I want you to talk about it now. Yeah, I want some hot takes.
Here's my hot take on Mr. and Mrs. Smith is actually a more deeply sophisticated movie than you're giving it credit for. Because here's what's going on. You have two people who have like the idyllic home, idyllic house. Both of them have idyllic on the surface good jobs, but they're both harboring deep dark secrets that they don't know each other. So mm-hmm. there's inauthenticity there.
Okay,
they're not talking to each other, right? So what happens? They discover each other's secret, right? And the best visual metaphor for marriage in general is when secrets come out and people aren't being authentic. That shit gets tore up. The house is literally just... they destroy their own house, right? So they discover that despite this inauthenticity, they actually love each other, right? But and here's where most rom-coms come action movies would say, okay, you know, let happily ever after. But what you discover is that they actually have to learn to renegotiate their communication. Their signals, their hand signals. Why do I get the small gun? Why do you get the big gun? These are all ways in which the movie is smart because it goes, look, despite this authenticity, you still have to learn to communicate. And these two people have to learn to communicate. The end shot of the movie is a perfect visual metaphor. They're in sync. They're together. They're moving around slowly, ballet. It's actually a deeply sophisticated movie. Watch it again with my brilliant insight attached to it.
Do you think that I'm missing out because I've never been married?
Do
you feel like because you've been married and you're happily married...
I don't want to tell you how to live your life.
No, but do you know what I mean? Do you think that there are things that you appreciate that
I don't think you have to have been
can't.
Married. I think you have to have been in a relationship and understand how important authenticity, no matter how hard the truth is, that you need to tell your partner these things.
Sean, I still had your mic off. Can you do all that again?
Sure.
I did like that aspect of the film, you know, with the marriage and keeping up appearances and things like that. And Angelina Jolie's character being like this perfect little housewife, and she's all hot and she makes meals and the beautiful house.
Right. And there's that banter, that meaningless surface level. Oh, I see you redid the living room.
Right.
Yes, it needed to be redone. That's how couples talk if they're not actually communicating.
Well, I like the fact that she doesn't really give a shit about the marriage. Like, it's just all... literally a facade, a character that she plays to keep her undercover.
And he doesn't either. They're both in other worlds. They're consumed by their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect metaphor for the way a lot of marriages operate these days.
He's my favorite beard of all time.
Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
Oh. Beard in what sense?
You know, we can talk about him as overrated or underrated. That'd be like a whole show.
Just
Brad Pitt.
I'm pro Brad Pitt.
I'm pro Brad Pitt too. Yeah.
Mixed legacy.
And also Angelina Jolie. I mean, we've been really positive for at least 4 minutes now. It's time for Papa to bring us
down. Bring us down, Papa.
Jesus Christ.
All right. Puncture our balloons.
All right, you goddamn clan of Care Bears over here. Clan
of Care Bears. Isn't that the side project you had? It was like a
It's my punk act.
Prog rock trio. Clan of Care Bears.
So
that's
my
the
pick,
hashtag for the show.
Overrated comedy, and it was kind of representative of several overrated comedies that came out in this decade. Wedding Crashers.
All right.
Yeah.
Wedding Crashers. Yep. Now, everyone taken on their own in that film. I like Owen Wilson a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Vince Vaughn. Mm-hmm. Both the female leads. Like, Rachel McAdams is my soulmate. She Isla Fisher was introduced. We all like that. But if you watch the film as a film, there are so many just cringeworthy, over-the-top, not well-executed. Like, very little of it made me laugh. And yet, what I resent most of it, this was, like, back when I was, like, trying to, I guess, date people and things like that and be normal.
Who are you? What are you trying to date now? Now that you're not dating people.
I just stare at my cat and sing Lionel
Richie.
But
you said dating people. I guess you've changed species. Or
I have, yeah. I'm now engaged to a plate of scrambled eggs.
I knew that would happen when we legalized gay marriage.
Exactly.
It's a slippery slope. I've been saying that for years.
All along.
Now you're married to chicken ovums. Good.
Damn it.
So I remember, like, flirting via MySpace, not to date myself too much, and you would have your little sections of, like, these are my top films, these are my top, you know, movies. Every girl who was doing the whole, like, I am one of the guys, I like that humor, was like, I love Wedding Crashers. And I cannot tell you how many messages were sent, like, through gritted teeth, like, I too liked Wedding Crashers. It was funny when they did that thing.
Okay, movie versus film is also, I mean, like, okay, if we're going to talk about, like, Rashomon, it is not.
Mm-hmm.
But
continue.
I think there's a certain amount. I don't remember it that way, first of all. Second of all, one, I think it's funny trying to watch it now. I don't think you could air that in the sort of post Me Too movement. Like, if you just watch the opening scene.
What are the most problematic things? I know the opening scene of the 80s-esque montage of topless women. And I'm like, all right, that's a nod.
That would be highly problematic. But I think in terms of, like, it just being a silly movie that has Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn and all these people.
Maybe the only part I like. Mom, the meatloaf, fuck. Yeah, and then he's just screwing with a nunchuck.
Yeah, that was great.
Robe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I can't. I can't really disagree with you more on this.
Okay.
Wow. Like, in terms of it being a movie that's entertaining, it has all sorts of people that have gone on to do all sorts of fabulous stuff. From, like, Bradley Cooper, you know what I mean? Like, Isla Fisher and different things. Like, if you haven't seen Bachelorette, you should also see that immediately.
I think you can be a great actor and, you know, go on to great things. Like, Lawrence Fishburne was in Apocalypse Now, and we all know that was a giant stinker.
He's also in which Saturday morning television show?
Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Exactly.
Yep. Ty.
He was?
Cowboy
he was
Wayne.
Chair. Yep.
Oh, he was Cherry. Yeah.
Oh, no,
he's like Cowboy Wayne or something.
Mm-hmm. Phil Hartman was on that.
What? Yeah.
Carol Kane.
No.
What?
Phil Hartman was in the stage show.
Oh, that's right.
And then he got cut out of it when they made it into a kid show.
No.
Yes.
Oh, I'm almost certain he makes an appearance as Captain Carl at least once.
Does he?
I'm almost certain he does. Because I would watch that in the 80s when I was in the Air Force, and we would actually drink on Saturday mornings watching it.
That sounds amazing.
Because there was nothing else to do in upstate fucking Maine where I was stationed. So.
Yeah, drinking to pee.
You were protecting the northern border? Is that what you were doing
in
Canada?
Where do you think B-52s fly? What's the fastest route to Russia? Over the North Pole. Boom. Drop knowledge, Mike, Air Force, military.
Well, you're going to get a knock at your door later today.
Oh, as if, like, nobody knows. Like, there wasn't a huge nuclear butt base in northern Maine. So.
I didn't know that.
Loring Air Force Base.
Really?
It's War Games. It's one of the first bases destroyed in War Games. And, when the general's on the mic, men, we're watching you. We're staying. Airman Johnson at Loring Air Force Base, sir.
Are you going to crap on that movie too, Papa?
No, I'd like to play a game. It's a good one. Dabney Coleman.
What about Dabney Coleman?
Gotta love him.
What's not to love about Dabney?
That's what I'm saying.
Who doesn't love Dabney Coleman?
They know you're just trying to start fights.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so you failed. Swing and a miss.
Okay, so where are we? Okay,
Missy hasn't told.
I have.
It's such a bro podcast.
I love it.
Right.
I'm just one of the bros. No, I spoke.
So am I the only one who strongly disagrees with Papa? Just because it's his podcast doesn't mean you can't speak truth.
About Wedding Crashers?
I run the mic.
Do you like Wedding Crashers?
Yeah,
just about Wedding Crashers? It's fine. It's funny. It's entertaining.
Thank you. Yeah, it's okay.
It's fine.
It's entertaining. I liked
it at the time. Like, it's the Domino's pizza of movies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
I'm with Busy on
this. It's succeeds.
Have, yeah. Okay, let me ask you a question. Has anyone rewatched it?
Yeah, I saw it again like a year or two ago.
Yeah, but
shocked.
If you think it's overrated, why have you rewatched it? Think of it all the movies that are great. You've only watched one. How many times have you watched Lawrence of Arabia?
Once.
So if it's so if it's so good, how come you're not rewatching it? But yet you're rewatching Wedding Crashers.
I have a great answer for you. So prepare to be counterpunched.
You had a cat on your lap and you didn't want to get up, and it was on
that's a valid point.
My brother only comes over to the house every so often, and I like to hang with him. He has horrible taste, so I have seen. I cannot tell you how much Pawn Stars. What was the Detroit version of Pawn Stars with like the family? Like the really oily looking dude.
I have no.
It had another pornographic. I am not. Hardcore porn.
Oh my gosh!
Their
yes.
Target demo.
90 Day Fiance.
I have never seen a reality television program except for
Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Pee Wee's Playhouse. And what's and the first two or three seasons of The Real World. That's it.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Back when reality TV was reality TV exactly. And not scripted.
Exactly. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So he came over and was like, I'm going to watch Wedding Crashers. I was like, well, shit, this is happening.
And so this is more about how much you love your brother and not so much about how you hated that movie.
No, see, be authentic. You know, once you're authentic, you could forge true, authentic relationships.
All right. I feel like, you know what? We've really had a breakthrough.
I think we have.
Yeah. And I think we should move on to the next selection.
What's the next selection? I forget.
So we've done overrated comic or comedian, overrated movie. Now, TV,
or underrated.
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 Yeah. TV show.
I was turning him, Sean. Damn you.
Underrated TV show?
TV show.
Who's going first? Am I going first?
You're going first. Right. We're going to keep the same format we've been doing for the last hour.
Okay. This is a deep cut, so please, I understand if no one relates to this. So, back in 1979, 1980... Lorne Michaels, fresh off, he was actually he was producer of Saturday Night Live, and then Dick Ebersol became the producer, right? So Lorne Michaels was looking around for something to do, and he thought, what if we did Saturday Night Live for kids as a children's show? And there was a show that lasted one season, and it actually won an Emmy, but it only lasted one season. It was called Hot Hero Sandwich. And I'm not making it up. I'm not making that up.
Sounds like an Urban Dictionary.
It really does.
I'm not making it up. It's called Hot Hero Sandwich. And not only was Hot Hero Sandwich fucking brilliant for its demographic, the writing was great. There was actually like a before we had Doctor who's the
McStuffins?
Who's the
Strangelove.
Guy? I have a speech. I have a speech impediment. Let me.
How dare you, John Papa Giorgio?
You.
You blue collar bastard.
You blue collar Greek swarthy bastard.
Wow, all the hate
who's,
mail.
Who's the guy who would offer advice on MTV? Dr. Drew, right. Before Dr. Drew, there was a psychologist who would answer kids' questions, teenagers' questions.
Aww.
It was, and the sketch writing was fucking fantastic. Also, the musical guests. This is here's a list of the short list of the musical guests they had on Saturday morning on this sort of SNL.
Tell us.
Kiss.
What?
Joe Jackson.
In the morning?
Eddie Money. This is like 1980.
Wow.
Again,
I want two tickets.
True educational programming.
It was fucking great. Joe Jackson, an out homosexual in 1980, performing in a kids' program. It was a great show. It's underrated. It never gets any love, and I don't understand why, because I watched every single episode.
Were you drinking to it, too?
I was 13, 14.
Okay.
Yeah,
wait, so you were not drinking to it?
Yeah.
You didn't answer the question.
I mean, not in my household, no.
You faked your papers after Pearl Harbor. Many of us did. It's all good.
True.
You know what?
So that's no one knows it. You guys can't relate to it. I completely understand. I'm an old man, so.
You're looking at me like you knew that I was going to say I like Pearl Harbor, but I'm not going to say it. I'm not going
to
say it.
Let's not digress and let's get to busy.
A lot. So many a man died that day. But okay, continue.
Yeah, I just thought we meant the location, not the day. It's a lovely place. Anyway, I have two because, again, I don't know because who I'm talking to.
You're making up, as the only woman on this episode, you should have two.
Oh, thanks, guys. First, Kids in the Hall. Is that underrated?
I think that's what I don't know.
I think it is underrated.
Why do you
think it's again in that Bamford and Christopher Guest
Yeah, beloved now
debate.
And
yeah. I liked it at the time.
But it, I guess it didn't have a
It was all men, and
it went 5 seasons, right?
Yeah.
It went.
On HBO?
But it was Comedy Central.
Right.
I think. No, no. Oh, was it HBO?
They took it from HBO.
Yeah,
they took it from HBO.
Yeah, it was first on HBO.
Yeah. Okay.
And then was there a Canadian broadcast of it as well? Or was
I think they are Canadian.
Yeah.
Well, they are, but like, was it a CBC thing first and then HBO?
That
got
I don't
it,
know.
And Comedy Central got
it? I think it was CBC. It was, well, they're all Canadian, so I don't know. I think it was in Canada first.
Right. It was like a weird, yeah, human centipede of comedy thing.
Right. Lorne Michaels produced it, though.
Yes. Yes, he did. Back in the day, I guess.
Good point.
And there's another one that's coming to me now. This isn't the one that I had prepared.
Oh.
But speaking of HBO, improvisation for you guys. It's had Ricky Gervais, and it's on HBO, and
extras?
It's about... No, not extras. They're in a nursing home.
Oh, it's on Netflix.
Oh, is that Netflix?
Yeah.
Derek!
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That one. I didn't see a whole lot of that, so I can't speak to a lot of that, but I liked that show.
I dislike Derek strongly.
Oh. Yeah. Is it because he plays a... disabled fellow able-bodied or
no? I've enjoyed Forrest Gump. I feel like Stephen Merchant was the power of that duo.
Steve Merchant, yes.
Yeah. Like seeing Ricky do his own thing, I was like, it's not one of those deals where it deftly leapt between comedy and drama.
Right.
Like I feel it failed to accomplish either, and you're just like, what the shit am I watching? It's like, I will do anything to avoid my life. It's one of the few Netflix shows, like 3 episodes in, I'm like, I got better things to do. Yeah.
True.
I think part of why I have a hard time being negative about shows or anything, and it's not a criticism against you. It's just, I think about coming up and playing in bands for so many years. It's just sort of like, there are some awful bands that I think are just, you know, borderline war crimes.
Mm-hmm. Red Hot Chili Peppers, but go ahead.
Wow. Okay. But just having played in bands, written songs, you got to learn your instrument, you got to write a song, mm-hmm. you got to organize a band, you got to book a show, promote the show. All of those things are so much work. And now, like, having, you know, working on my TV show and I got another script I'm working on. It's a miracle that any of those things happen.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, it's harder to crap on it, partly because of my religious upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
True, as you've said. Partly just because I know how hard it is to do that.
Right.
Just like, you know, 150 people trying to make a movie, or even if it's a small one, I'm like, there's definitely a ton of movies. And I'm like, this is a waste of my life to watch even an hour and a half of this. But at the same time, like, everyone worked really hard to do it.
Right.
I mean, I appreciate that you're that nice, but... there are tons of restaurants out there. Even if they taste like shit, I'm not like, look, someone built this building. This guy came up with the sign idea. This other dude did all this cooking. So, ergo, I'm going to eat here, even though it tastes like human refuse. Like,
No. I won't eat there, but I'm not going to go on Yelp.
No, I don't do that either. Yeah. Like, I have to find a syringe in my Pepsi.
I think we should also keep in mind, just to echo somewhat what Brian said, we have no clue what's going to catch on and what isn't. Mm-hmm. We have no clue what's going to be big for whatever reasons. We have despite the talent attached to it. I think
true.
Did you guys see that? I think it was a Hulu documentary. Too Funny to Fail.
Yes, I love that.
All the talent associated with the Dana Carvey show, mm-hmm. and this show should have succeeded. And clearly, the content was spot on, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. Right. You guys know who William Goldman is, right? You guys know who William Goldman. So Goldman's a screenwriter, and Goldman's a screenwriter who wrote The Princess Bride, Marathon Man, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He's sort of like the screenwriter. When he died about a month and a half, 2 months ago, maybe a little longer. But he wrote a lot of nonfiction too, some great memoirs about like Memories of the Screen Trade or whatever. And one of the books that I've read all his nonfiction, and of course we're all familiar with his movies. We can quote them verbatim, right? He's that great of a screenwriter. But one of the books I hadn't read was one called The Season, and he wrote it back in 1971. And basically, he decided, as a journalistic, tack, to go see every single production on Broadway for that season, every single, from musicals to plays. And he didn't just do reviews. He basically decided to take a specific play and view it through the lens of Broadway culture. Like, find out about the producers behind it. Find out how it got funded. Find out what actor is you know, who had a previous hit and is now in this thing. Just very sort of focused lens. What you come to understand after reading this book is that producers on Broadway, and we can analogize for, you know, content producers on whatever we're streaming, movie studios, it's a gamble. Nobody knows what's going on. Nobody has any fucking clue. And even though you have the right actor, the right screenwriter, or the right playwright in this case, the right producer, the right director, anything can go wrong and can doom this thing to the ashes, or the message gets lost and the audience doesn't see it. There's shit out there, but to Brian's point, produce it anyway, because nobody has any fucking clue.
Yeah.
Who knew that Tommy, what's his name, The Room?
Oiseau.
Who knew that this was going to be a cult classic that people would condescend to in ways that we do now? But still, he made it. It's a piece of shit. We found value in it that way.
I just think there's so much about, like, doing stuff that you're happy with. I mean, there's a certain amount,
fuck it, I'm making the musical about cats that sing.
We're just... Finally. I'm in.
Right.
For an hour we're talking, what would you rather be doing? Like, you know, I'm... All of the money that comes out of this show right into Papa's quest to get uncut, never been stomped on cocaine.
Yeah.
We will see none of it. But we're having a good time. And right. I think that a lot of it is like people who are happiest are people who are doing shows that they believe in. And sometimes they take off, sometimes they don't. But at least you're having a good time. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many people making crappy movies or doing shows that are garbage. And they're not happy because, well, partly because they're doing something they don't really believe in.
Right.
So I'd much rather have to work another job or a couple jobs and be able to do stuff that I care about.
Right.
That's just me.
I do believe so much in cocaine. You're right. I want to live out the plot of Vice City.
All right. So my pick, I was going back. I'm not going to pick two, but I'm gonna waffle between two if I can. This will surprise no one.
Okay.
Either, and you guys can pick for me, either Wondershowzen from MTV2.
Right.
Are you guys, do you know Wondershowzen?
No,
oh my gosh. You got to go check it out.
I'm old.
There's some comedy about children and puppets, which is maybe part of why I'm doing Puppets in Paradise. Mm-hmm. The other one is The State from MTV.
Oh, my God. The State. Jesus the Christ. State. I love that show.
What was
that,
The State?
Oh, my God. Oh, my exactly. God.
The State.
Though.
The State was brilliant. I still have a friend. Like, every time we have a conversation on Facebook, it immediately devolves into the answer being $240 worth of pudding.
$240 worth of pudding. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But if you look if you go to The State and you see all the people that have come out of that,
right,
and all of the things that they're doing now, it's just phenomenal. It's kind of like the writers on Too Funny to Fail, like
right.
Louis C.K., other people whose last names I will mispronounce. So many.
And why, Brian?
Stephen Colbert. Because
there's
Steve
a Greek guy.
Right.
Starburns from 30 Rock. That's where you would
know. Oh, no,
Nemo Stantimopoulos.
When it first came out on DVD, that's the one of the, I bought it the first day it came out.
Which
it
was one?
The State.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was MTV's, probably their most
successful. The State had ass pennies, right?
Did it? I think so. No.
Is that condition where it burns when you...
It's what I'm dying of. No, it was a bit. I'm really sure it was... Oh, God. I'm trying to remember who was involved in it. But in essence, the concept was this dude, every time he got pennies, he would shove them up his ass. And so he could feel better.
I don't remember that.
For those who are listening, Google that at work.
Yeah.
So everyone would have touched his ass pennies.
The State was MTV's probably most successful sketch comedy.
So my parents disabled MTV.
I'm sorry about that.
Because of Beavis and Butthead.
They turned the little key on the side of cable.
We didn't have cable growing up. And when we finally did. We definitely were not allowed to watch anything on Fox. No.
Ass pennies is UCB, sorry.
Yeah. None of that stuff. Oh, yeah. That was UCB.
Okay.
So, Wondershowzen is perfect for present-day sort of YouTube clip culture. The kind of stuff that rocketed Key and Peele to stardom so much. Right. I mean, they're very talented, but if YouTube hadn't...
Pronounce their names again.
Key and Peele.
All right. Got those.
Keegan Michael.
Keegan Michael. Mm-hmm.
Key?
Jordan, I believe it's pronounced K.
Yes.
Just kidding.
So those are my picks.
Little tilde.
I would probably go the State.
The State.
It's just
Phenomenal. Because I'm Doug and I'm out of here.
I think I'll give you that.
You got to go back and watch that.
I guess you'd call her an ex. I don't know, but she was obsessed with the state.
She was. Why did you let this woman go?
She was.
I don't understand.
So we could date his eggs.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hi-oh.
Call back. Well played.
Wait,
which relationship has
lasted longer? The ex or the eggs?
The eggs. I mean, eggs are my everything now. But
in a breakfast burrito or is it just on a plate?
I'm old school. Like, it's just over easy. And then I just, like, touch the membranes. And I'm like, hey, girl.
That's disgusting.
So your eggs. Okay, all right.
Actually, yeah. And the ex, although only being a quarter Greek, she did have the Greek last name. I think she's, like, the only Greek
ex I've
ever had.
So she wasn't Greek enough for you.
Oh, now we know.
She's the only.
Yet again, it was a race thing.
Yeah. I think.
Purebred. Yeah.
She's actually like Greek and Lebanese and Israeli or something.
Who has problems with last names now?
Yeah. I don't even remember her last name, so that's a problem.
Which TV show do you hate?
Yeah, what are you going to crap on?
Okay.
What are you going to shit
show?
On, you heartless bastard?
I'm pretty much ready. Like, I'm coming out like Gorgeous George for this one. Just like, we're taking out the Bobby pins
wrestler
from my golden locks. Yeah, just eating up the crowd booing as I announce this.
Yes.
And mind you, I don't dislike this. I like it well enough, but I find it intensely overrated.
Cool.
Arrested Development.
Interesting. Okay, again, this goes back to group mind.
Yeah.
It goes back to like Arrested Development at the time that it came out, or now that it's on the streaming platform and everybody can watch it.
Good question.
The new seasons, which are all that I've watched in recent memory, were kind of nakedly not great.
Yeah, right. I think you should fully discount the new
season. Yeah, I think so too. The ones that were made for Netflix.
Not a good sign, first of all, then, for the show's legacy.
But different writers, different producers.
What?
Different
I thought they kind of got the old man back together.
I mean,
they got the actors
back. They kind of went Fuller House on us with that.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, what? Like, is Kimmy Gibbler but no twins? Like, what?
I think you know what I mean to say. We don't need to unpack this.
Say their last
names. We've
Okay, so why do you think it's overrated?
I think the humor felt it was far more clever than it actually was. I think it kind of existed to make, like, you guys are all smart, so I'm not insulting you if you don't really enjoy.
No, you are insulting us.
Yeah, okay. With your weird last names. Get out of my country. I felt it was a show that relished thinking it was intensely clever and wasn't over the top clever. Like, it was right. Funny and it was witty in a lot of points, but it truly thought it was like the goddamn E equals MC square of comedy. And I've seen a lot of like sharper comedy.
So I'd like to hear that. So give me an example of what's cleverer.
Give us an example of sharper comedy.
Yes.
I forget the man's first name, but it's like
Red
Mr. Skelton. Bean.
That's where you're going to go immediately.
Mr. Bean?
Yeah.
Rowan Atkinson?
Rowan Atkinson?
Yes.
No,
wait. Are you thinking Rowan Atkinson?
Well, you're looking for a high five.
are you thinking Mr. Bean or Black Adder?
I was just going for a joke, a bean joke.
So dispense with the jokes. What do you think is clever?
A more cerebral comedy. Okay, you know what I fucking worship, and I will call underrated just because almost no one knows it. Peep Show, British show. Peep Show, truly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. They took it off Netflix, but you can find it on YouTube because of like lax international copyright stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just Peep Show is incredibly brilliant, great with callbacks. The character development is all for the most part grounded in reality. Like, I like David Cross, but him doing the whole Blue Man Group thing and come on.
Two things. One, you change the subject.
Okay.
Maybe I did.
Also, people should definitely Google that at work. Peep Show. If you're not familiar,
I'm actually
going to go. Yeah, I'm going to go back and watch that. I am not familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with
that. That's the only thing so far that anyone's brought up that I'm like, no, I really don't know.
How
that.
Does YouTube work in international waters?
I think I know. So I had friends that were like huge anime fans, and I remember that like as long as it hadn't been released here.
Oh.
You like people could just like legit download Japanese anime And there was no enforcement taking place because they're like, well, there's not an American.
Also, hence the trollololololo video.
Yes.
If when you take a break of watching Baby Shark on YouTube, go to Bing. If you the search algorithm,
the true search engine.
If you go to Bing, it's Microsoft search engine. There are different rules and stuff. So, like, if you search for the same thing say for example, really great Death from Above appearance on Conan, I think it was, where Max Weinberg jumps in and plays drums in the middle of their set. You can't find that on YouTube, but I think you have to go on Bing, and it's like right there. Well, who owns YouTube?
Google.
So they're driving certain things, right, certain places, because that's how they make their money. Bing, I don't think, has figured out how to make any money on anything. So they just, you search for stuff, and what you're searching for just sort of comes up. They're like, oh, is this what you wanted to watch? Because that's what you put in the search window. Here it is.
You're way too good an influence on me, you and Busy, because you went, who owns Google? And I wanted to scream, you'd mispronounce their last name. But
wow. Wow.
Thank
Conspiracy.
You. Guys. Yes.
C-O-N. Conspiracy.
Once you want to take off the training wheels with all your search engines, Ask Jeeves is there for you.
Ask Jeeves. Just... Alta Vista.
Alta Vista.
I will ask him nothing.
Yeah.
I'm just concerned that, in the future, I'd be really curious if they're just going to do, a WikiLeaks style dump of everyone's search histories.
Oh,
because what I've been doing lately is that I've been, when I Google stuff, I'll just ask Siri. And I'm like, if it's so stupid that I have to ask Siri quietly in my room so my housemates won't hear and make fun of me, then I really should not be Googling it.
Yeah, I...
dump my search history.
Jesus, all right.
Did Truman Capote meet Gore Vidal? Oh, my God.
I bet it's a lot of that.
How are you Googling? What? That's crazy.
Mine are more similar. Do I look good in blue? Those are my YouTube searches. Not so helpful.
Mine are not innocent.
All right, we've reached the 1 hour and 20 minute mark.
Criminal, just disgusting. God. What? Yeah.
We're just having so much fun.
Are we out of questions?
We did the questions, but we can keep yapping.
We did.
I've got one job out of Marriott, like 2 feet from here, good.
Can I say something about the comedy movies and what I think has become a tragedy when it comes?
Is this more about Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
No, this is less about Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So. One of the guys who I think is completely underrated as a comedic director, and he had, an incident that happened in his career and sort of derailed it, and he's never been allowed near a major comedy release since.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Where am I going with this? Say
who?
John Landis.
John Landis.
Wait, what did he do wrong?
He did a big thing wrong.
Comedy jail?
But here's the thing. Wait for it. So Landis directed, first he made his bones on the Groove Tube, right? Then he directed National Lampoon's Animal House. He directed Trading Places. He directed American Werewolf in London. There is no better editor of comedy and film than Landis.
He's great.
His cuts are perfect.
The poor choice of words.
Did he murder somebody?
He didn't murder somebody. It's that,
is he a part-time moil?
Look, guys, I'm going to defend him vociferously. Yeah. Landis was the director of a portion of the movie The Twilight Zone, in which a helicopter crashed and killed actor Vic Morrow and a child actor, right?
Two of them.
Two of them, right? I don't think he was the director on that, meaning that, as you know, in productions, there are first unit directors, second unit directors, third unit directors. But because he was helming the whole thing, he took the fall for that, right? Trust me, there are people in Hollywood who've done much more nefarious shit than Landis did, simply having his name attached to that movie. Landis is one of the best comedic directors ever, and it's actually kind of criminal that we don't let him near a set anymore because he's fantastic.
What has he done? I thought he had worked since. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, if you go to his IMDb page, ever since The Twilight Zone, it's been very little. He's directed some like minor stuff.
I mean, I think there could be like a whole episode of just like director jail. It's fascinating to hear directors. They usually only talk about it once they've come out of it.
Right.
But where they have a couple bombs and they have to have something successful and then they can sort of come out.
If he needs work, maybe we should reach out to him.
Here's a list of directors who have been in Hollywood director jail. Are you ready for this? Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Preston Sturges.
Yeah, but you know why Orson Welles?
Why? Tell me why.
I don't know why.
Well, the Hearst family.
But,
I mean, you know I love the Nerdist Empire.
No. That's not the only reason. I mean, he had ambitions and he wanted to make the movies he wanted to make, and the studios wouldn't let him make it. He wanted to, his Othello is genius. His F is for Fake is fucking genius. His I can't remember it.
The commercial he did for Frozen Peas, that was genius.
Chimes at Midnight is fucking genius. And again, Hollywood would not let him near major production.
Which is the kind of gangsterish film, Touch of Evil or something like that? Is that
A Touch of Evil.
Oh, the opening shot on that.
He didn't direct that, but he plays the heavy, literally the heavy in that, mm-hmm. right?
Orson Welles' last role.
I'm sorry?
Orson Welles' last role in a movie.
Muppet Show, right?
Was it?
Voice.
I'm sorry?
His voice. Only.
What was it?
A Family Guy?
Omicron, the Transformers movie.
Really?
The Eater of Planets.
So that's my rant on Landis, who is actually... you guys know that trope at the end of movies, like, blah, 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 went on to do this. He invented that. He fucking invented
what
that.
Did his go was on to do say?
apparently kill three people on a set, but still, he should be allowed near.
Just not near Choppers.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
No, I'm with you completely. I love God. You know what I do? You brought this up earlier, Busy. I love it. I think I love it, and then you actually sit through it, and it kind of. For the last chunk it bores, but I love the first part so much. Coming to America. Coming to America, I love until like act three, and then it might be...
I'm almost certain that's Landis too.
Oh, 100% it is. Yeah. Like by that point, he and Eddie kind of hated each other, but they still made the movie.
Yeah.
But damn, do I love the intro to Coming to America. Why'd they hate each other? Maybe a big personality thing? I don't know.
Because they're exactly alike.
Eddie has a huge ego, and Landis has a huge ego, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they were like still functional business wise, but they had kind of, I think he thought Eddie had become a huge prick from the time of Trading Places.
Yeah.
Which God damn, Trading Places is a masterpiece.
Yeah
great. That is.
Landis.
Yeah. I love it.
I hope no one tries to remake that and destroy it.
Well, here's the thing. Even if they tried, they would not be able to approximate.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, look take a look at the movie again and just watch how beautifully it's cut. Comedically, it's just cut beautifully.
Yes, pacing is key.
Pacing is everything.
When am I talking to people about movies,
are made
I
in
like,
the editing room.
Yeah, is the pacing. It's also fascinating. The there's a fascinating history of just like male directors and female editors.
Yeah,
how like it's the female editors who really can help make the picture.
Scorsese's. What's her name? What's his female editor? She's won like a number of Oscars.
Lorraine Newman.
Not Lorraine Newman, but that would be great.
No, but the balance of like, you know, that teamwork of like, right. you know, I think it's really, I don't know, I just love that. I like the teamwork aspect of...
I've got a nugget in that vein. George Lucas and his first wife, the only person ever associated with a Star Wars to get an Oscar, she edited the very first one.
Oh, really?
Really? Yeah.
Huh.
Really?
And a lot of people think that's why they've sucked ever since. I think she might have done that one in Empire, or maybe just the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she was part of the Muppet Show third one, but yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the world would be a better place if women were in charge of more things.
Obviously.
We'd definitely have a lot. I mean, we'd have maternity leave in this country. We'd fight a lot less wars.
One of my friends had longer paternity leave than his wife did maternity leave. Swear. And she was the one that birthed
that's
the thing.
Insane.
Let's not blame the victim.
Yeah.
True. Fair.
We'll cut out there.
Yeah.
Did we get the signal from Brian, the wordless signal?
No,
right
this is my hand signal for I'm hungry. Can we order Chinese food?
It's time for that chicken.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's get, are we going to get the official sponsorship from Chinese Dragon or?
I have to go home. You guys can eat Chinese food.
No, we were going to use you as our nude sushi table.
we were going to use his credit card. Oh, guess we're not writing this off on the old Unified Scene Theater credit card.
A huge.
No, you know, every party needs a pooper, and on this podcast, I'm the pooper.
Okay.
Super pooper.
Hey, John Papa Giorgio, where can people follow you on social media?
Ooh.
Well, you can type Papa's Basement into Bing or Ask Jeeves, and you'll get results for Twitter. No, it's I'm on Twitter at Papa's Basement, Instagram at Papa's Basement. That covers both me and the show. I'm not big enough to have fractured accounts.
Like, I mean, his GeoCities website also is a great. Good place to visit.
Ooh, yes! It's a little man with a hard hat. Oh, but it's man. Yeah. 2020.
Under construction.
Sean Westfall, where can people learn more about you and Unified Scene Theater?
That's a great question, Brian Duss. You can find me personally on Twitter. Personally, it's just really
personally
walking up to you and shaking hands on you. At Sean Westfall on Twitter and at Sean Westfall on Instagram. Classes and stuff like that. UnifiedSceneTheater.com. Facebook Unified Scene Theater. I'm sorry. It's Unified Scene Theater. On Twitter, we are Unified Scene DC, and on Instagram, we are Unified Scene DC. So,
Busy Fane.
Yes,
people want to follow you, and I know they do.
Of course, they do.
You're some improv groups.
Yep.
How do we follow you? What's your groups on Instagram? You're on Instagram.
I think Instagram's the best way. My improv team is called Oh That Baby, and you can follow us on Instagram at Oh That Baby Improv. We perform every other Tuesday with Washington Improv Theater, usually at The Source on 14th Street. And then if you really care about me, you can find me there too at Busy Fane.
Nice.
How often are you again at
Source? Every other Tuesday. But you could check out the schedule at witdc.org, and I perform on Oh That Baby.
And do you have an address for Sean's competition?
Sean's competition is 801 T Street Northwest, Unified Scene Theater, unifiedscene.com.
I don't think Washington Improv Theater even thinks of me as competition. I think they may have
as a
speck of dust that needs to be swept off every now and then.
No.
Well, that's until we blow them out like the Bamboo Lounge in Goodfellas.
That's right.
Too soon.
Too soon.
And you can. Thanks for asking. You can
hold
find
on,
me.
No, wait, let me do it. All right, go.
BP Dust, Twitter, BP Dust, Instagram, and Facebook, MySpace, and Friendster. Just look for Brian P. Dust, and I'm on there.
That's B as in Brian, P as in
Paul.
I'm glad that
Paul.
What's so annoying when I email you is I have to, like, I want to just do BP. And you don't auto-populate, I have to do B period P. And
really?
Then you'll, I hate it. Huh. It's the worst thing.
I'm known for being difficult.
No kidding.
Also tall.
All right. That was Papa's Basement. We're on YouTube as well. Find us there. iTunes, Stitcher. Everyone, plug this if you liked it. And that's it. We're done. Woo. We're good. Chinese
Yay.
Food.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Busy, for coming in.
Sure.
Brian, thank you. Sean, thank you.
Thank you.
Brian,
thank you all around.
Thank you.
Doctor.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Doctor.
Auf Wiedersehen.